And we say hello to Karen Stintz, former city councilor and TTC chair, now the president and chief executive officer of Variety Village, and Scott Reed, CTV News political commentator, joining us now for our Smart Speaker series. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. We are covering this breaking news here in Chicago.
And this is where six people, five adults, it has been confirmed, were killed on the scene. One person died later. So far, six deaths and a couple of dozen injuries of varying degrees in a mass shooting at a Chicago area 4th of July parade. So this is in Highland Park, Illinois, a little north of Chicago. An absolute tragedy, and yet something, Scott, that we have become far too used to, especially when the news breaks from south of the border.
Yeah, and I mean, it almost defies belief that you have to go through the motions of talking about it again. Because look, you know, like, this is what America wants. This is what America wants. One, it wants to create laws state by state, county by county, you know, all across the country, where people can, like, walk into a Walmart with an AR, whatever the Christ they call them, you know, these gigantic, crazy assault rifles. And they want to breed a brand of politics that produces absolutely bent incel young men. And guess what? You put all that together and you get a lot of shootings, a lot of violence, and then a lot of people saying, my God, you know, that's terrible. Well, if it was so terrible, you would not actually be a laboratory for these ingredients, but you want to do it, and so you're going to get more of it.
Yeah, have a listen to what an American went through on Independence Day today.
He reloaded, and then that's when I grabbed my son and I ran around the corner and I put him in a dumpster, a garbage dumpster, and I asked some people to stay there with him because I had to go back to find the rest of my family. And when I went back, there was people shot on the ground. There was a little boy that was being carried away. Probably 6 to 8 years old. And that was the worst part of all of this, because being a father and, you know, hiding your children and seeing a little boy carried away, I can't imagine that what that family's going through right now.
Police are offering that the five dead are adults. The six dead are adults, but there are injured children. We don't know the numbers there. But Karen, Americans hiding their children in dumpsters during an Independence Day parade. Is this even real life?
Yeah, you know, again, I have to echo what Scott said. I mean, I think the most honest thing the president can say is not that he's shocked by it. Like, he can't be shocked by it at all. And the honest thing he would say is, look, guys, this is what you voted for. This is what you get. And if you're not going to have gun laws, you're going to have to hide your kids in dumpsters, or people are going to die. And so, you know what? Welcome to America. Like, everyone's got to stop with the praying to Jesus and being surprised. No one can be surprised. Tomorrow, there will be another shooting. The day after that, there will be another shooting. There will be shootings every single day, because that's what Americans do. Because, as Scott said, that's what they want. Because if they wanted something different, they would make different decisions.
Karen, I mean, as you're talking there, it just hits me. When we think, right before the Roe v. Wade decision by the United States Supreme Court, it overturned New York State's ban on concealed carry weapons, which is a law that had been in that state for about 100 years. The Supreme Court of the United States deeming that unconstitutional. So to Scott's point, it's saying, well, this is what America wants. And I'm sitting here thinking of that ruling from a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, and combining that with the fact that there are more guns in that country than actual Americans. And I'm saying to myself, even if everything in terms of the laws got better tomorrow, it would take years at best before they even got a handle on this. I don't even know where they go from here.
100%. The genie's out of the bottle. And, you know, the other reality is that all the gains that might be even being made around Black Lives Matter and you know, how minorities get treated in the U.S. is all out the window now, because with the absence of a law for concealed carry, like, if anyone can just conceal a gun, then the police have to assume that everyone has a gun, because that's the only smart assumption that police can make. So then when another fellow is gunned down in Ohio and he has 30 bullet wounds, they don't know if they're entry or exit. Well, that's every day from here on in. That will be every day, because that's how the police are going to respond when they don't know if someone has a gun and they have to assume they do.
All right. That's America. Let's go to Pearson. Terminal One. I did not go to Prince Edward Island last Thursday. I was supposed to fly and then come back Sunday. No, it was a mess. I bailed and I have no regrets. This is what I heard after the show. My flight was at 9 p.m. So I got off the air at 6 and said, let me just call Air Canada and cancel this flight.
Welcome to Air Canada. We sincerely apologize that due to unforeseen circumstances, our call volume has temporarily exceeded our capacity to answer or place your call on hold. To offer you immediate help, we have great self-service tools to assist you make bookings, verify flight status, update travel documents, select seats, and much, much more. Please visit us at aircanada.com.
We do not have anyone to take your call. Please use our self-service tools online. This is all I got. Scott, what do you make of what's happening at Pearson?
Well, I mean, it's happening at Pearson. And I know that there's some news today that suggests that Pearson is the worst in the world. But, you know, it's we're 10.5 and somebody else is 10 and someone else is 9.5. This is, you know, it's a global disaster and it's a consequence of the pandemic. And, you know, we come out of the pandemic, organizations are like, okay, well, should we actually hire all the people we want and pay them in the way that we should? No, let's not, you know, negotiate against ourselves because we want to make certain that, you know, we maintain our ability to compete for share price, especially because post pandemic, maybe markets will plunge and then our executive compensation, which is tied to share performance, might plunge. And so we'll just sort of see if we can blame the government. And so it's been a big, gigantic game of I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to point fingers. And oh, by the way, Pearson is now a graveyard for luggage. And as that voicemail says, if you're a passenger, you're boned.
Yeah, Karen, I mean, it turns out that the vaccine mandates weren't the only thing holding up traffic at the airport.
No, and it's, but you know, I gotta love Air Canada. Like, I don't think I've ever called an Air Canada helpline and had it be answered. I think every single time I call it, like, so no volumes are higher than expected. No, they're not higher than expected. They're this way all the time.
I thought I would at least be put on a list and get a call back in about 6 to 8 hours. I mean, I thought there would be something. Push one if you want to hear from us eventually.
Right, exactly. And but, you know, I do think that the last vestiges of the COVID protocols are hanging on dearly at the airport, from, you know, the mask mandates to even the vaccine mandates just got lifted. So they now can hire people who won't get vaccinated. And but it does sound like there's some severe problems there. And even the canceling of the flights that Air Canada is going to do, you know, of course, it wasn't going to help this weekend because it's a summer solution, but it's a bit of a head scratcher. I'm not going to lie about why it is that they can't figure this out, because, you know, again, it's not like we just said, okay, here's an airport and we're going to hire new people that have never run an airport before. Like, presumably these people are very competent and have run airports and airlines for years. And so it just begs logic as to why, after this much time, with very, like, there's the unknowns are known now. Like, why can't they figure this out?
Well, it's also a customer service issue, right? No, it's a
it
customer service issue. There was a woman whose dog was left there overnight, crated for more than 20 hours. Because she landed at around midnight and she said, hey, I got one dog, but the other dog's not here. She waited until 3 a.m. and staff at Pearson said, just go home and call your airline.
So, oh my God.
There's no one here to help you find your dog. And then when they did find the dog the next day, it was covered in urine and it had been in a crate for more than 20 hours.
Oh my God.
Scott,
none of this actually begs logic. This is all entirely predictable and it is logical. The logic is profit, right? And I don't want to sound like a raging red communist, but like the logic is we would rather cancel flights than hire more people, because in order to hire people and to get them to work at Pearson and to get them through the clearance processes that must be done and to train them, it's a massive upfront expenditure. And they knew 4 months ago, 5 months ago, 6 months ago, that was an option, but they rationalized that the expenditure was not worth the benefit. They'd rather cut costs and cut flights in the middle of a crisis now than assume those expenditures. And it's a cost-benefit analysis. That's what's going on. And that's what's led us to this point. And, you know, they figured, well, we can muddy the waters and blame the government and say it's all their fault. And, you know, for 4 weeks, people will believe that. And then after that, you know, it just becomes, well, this is the way it is. And people hold it against everybody.
Okay. Scott Reed, Karen Stintz, our Monday Smart Speakers. We'll talk daycare next. Our Monday Smart Speakers, Karen Stintz, former city councilor and TTC chair, who is now the president and CEO of Variety Village. Scott Reed is a CTV News political commentator. So this $10 a day child care program is still in its very early stages, and there is some limbo around it in that some for-profits are expressing concern that they will lose revenue and they need that made up. Not all municipalities, in fact, 20 of Ontario's 47 have set up portals for daycares in their regions to either opt in or opt out of the plan. There's some question. We know the money is federal, but how much of it will there be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Scott, where are we with this in general? Is it a complicated process still in its early days, or are we seeing some bungling pretty much off the hop?
It's a complicated process in its early days, and we will probably see some bungling. But that's not what's driving the story. What's driving this story and the reason that we're talking about it is that for-profit centers recognize that their model is threatened by what's been proposed, essentially a public daycare system. Like, they know that, right? They know that their ability to charge at that level is going to be threatened. And so this is noise. This is a vested interest set of noise. So we should discern and recognize that. Fundamentally, what we have not had for a long time is the ability to say, sorry, you actually have to be licensed. You have to be programmatic. It can't just be kind of Wild West. And we're going to actually, essentially use the market to say what the market dictates in terms of cost. And so this is what parents need. This is what families have been asking for. This is what they're going to get. It will be a bumpy road. And this is the first cry and howl from those who realize, we're not going to be able to charge the rates that we did. And we're going to try to pretend and argue and complain that it's the fault of government and that this is how we're getting gypped and all that. But ultimately, what it really is those people don't like the fact that their pockets won't be as filled with coins as they used to be.
Yeah. Karen, do you make any sense of this? I mean, $10 a day, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, I have a little bit of a different take on it than Scott does. Some people need $10 a day daycare. Some people don't. And so I've never been of the belief that you should subsidize everybody. You should subsidize those who need it. And, you know, certainly when my kids were in daycare, it wasn't $10. And our daycare was run out of the local school because the school board charged an enormous amount in rent. And then the city decided not to subsidize that anymore. So it is complicated. And the reason it's the Wild West is because there's a shortage of daycare and people got creative and some people got desperate and lots of models sprung up. Some probably more transparent than others, but there is no question that any federal provincial agreement on daycare subsidy doesn't include all of the costs that go into running a daycare because they can't possibly understand all of them. And not all daycares are publicly run and they shouldn't be publicly run.
With Karen Stintz and Scott Reed, our Monday Smart Speakers. So in Sarnia, a city council there debated a motion over dress code. And one of the councillors, a man named Nathan Colquhoun, showed up in a fedora and a tank top to essentially make a point. And I mean, Karen, you have been a city councillor in Toronto. Scott, you've been in the political game for quite a while. Karen, we'll start with you. Do dress codes matter anymore?
So yes, I believe they do. And I'm probably reflecting my age here, but when I was in politics and on the media and, you know, getting feedback about what worked and what didn't, the advice I was given was don't wear anything that's going to call attention to your outfit because it will take away from your message. And if you want people to listen to what you're saying, you don't want them talking about what you're wearing. And the one way to guarantee that is to have a common set of norms around what a dress code should look like. Now, there's no question that, you know, working from home has kind of upset that because, you know, you roll out of bed and as long as you have a proper shirt on, you know, you could be wearing your jammies and nobody would really know. But I do think that there is value in having some common standards around business attire and what that means.
Oh, yeah. And I can't wait to hear if Scott also advised male politicians with the same advice that you received, Karen. I was trying to think as you were saying it, does this apply to men, too? And I did laugh out loud, realizing the only male politician I can think of is Rob Ford admitting to smoking crack cocaine with a CFL tie. That CFL tie I will remember forever. But otherwise, no, men, male politicians, I don't think they fall under this, Scott.
Well, it depends. I mean, I think we get hung up on, like, obviously the rules apply completely differently. And like so many things, it is completely different for women than men. But here's my fundamental view. We get hung up on dress code. Okay. Like, it was up to me, like, whatever. I would, like, be wandering around, you know, with a pack of darts up my sleeve and a bottle of Molson Golden, right? But I actually think the fundamental thing isn't when people start protesting a dress code, people cheer because they're like, yeah, they shouldn't be telling us what to wear. And we know what the gender differences are. And they're not to be like that. It shouldn't be so strict. But here's the principle. And I think the principle is important because, you know, I'm kind of in the same boat as Karen. My view is dress up, don't dress down. Halter top, I know the guy was making a point, but some people actually go like that. Dress up, don't dress down. Whatever your version of dress up is, okay? Like, take it up one notch. Take the extra jacket from the closet. Don't just go with the t-shirt that, you know, has a stethoscope and a tie on it, okay? Like, just dress up, don't dress down. Show some decorum. Show some respect for the place that you work. Show some respect for your colleagues. Show some respect for yourself. Maybe that makes me old-fashioned. Maybe that makes me a hard ass, but I believe that.
Shout out to the Molson Golden reference as well. That is not a brand of Molson I'd thought of in a really, really long time. Thank you for the throwback.
I didn't know Sigs and Beer was dressing down.
Right, right. Those old 80s polos.
It was 80% of grade 11 for me, Scott.
Well, it worked out okay. It worked out okay. There's a survey of 6,500 people online, and this is asking which National Hockey League fan base is the most annoying, and the Toronto Maple Leafs fan base wins or loses, depending on what your perspective is.
It's the only one they have.
Scott, I'm hesitant to ask you this as a fan of Les Habitants, but I'm sure you're on board with this survey.
Not really.
Oh.
Not really.
You don't think the Leaf fans are annoying?
Yeah, I do. I think they're kind of hopeless and pathetic and annoying. But listen, here's the deal. If we're going to really talk about bad fans, Get a tall can of beer and go to Philadelphia to watch a hockey game. Okay? Those are bad fans. Those are bad people. They will fight you. They will scream at you. You can't wear a visiting jersey there. Like, those people are lunatics. Toronto, we're complaining about, oh my God, is the crowd too corporate? Are they too passive? Are they too focused on next year will finally be the year and all those kinds of things? That's not bad. Philadelphia, they spit on you. They will punch you. That's bad.
I think Leafs fans are losing more money than Flyers fans. They get a return on their investment. Karen?
Well, the one quote I just loved in that article more than anything is that the Leafs fans are delusional, because every year we go in thinking that this is going to be the year, and we have no evidence to suggest that will be the case.
And you're saying anyone
on this panel and anyone listening in the city of Toronto that the Habs win a cup before the Leafs win another cup. It's going to happen for sure. The Habs are on the march.
We'll hold you to
it. Las Vegas win a cup before the Leafs? Las Vegas, for heaven's sakes. Like, that's ridiculous.
Karen Stintz, are you a Leafs fan?
No.
Okay, great. Thank you. I needed that on record.
Refuse to change. Guess what happens? It's the definition of insanity. Let's take the same team into the same competition and see if we'll get a different result. You won't.
All right, Habs fan. Thank you both so much. Scott Reed, Karen Stintz, our smart speakers on this beautiful Monday afternoon.